Thank you, Mr. Chair. The title you provided for this topic two of agenda item five on your agenda is Application of International Humanitarian Law, Possible Prohibitions and Regulations. And we very much appreciate this topic on the agenda, and we would like to use this opportunity to point out where we think there are some points of convergence, or perhaps even consensus in the room. And the title of the topic itself is already telling in that respect, we think, because it expresses, first of all, that IHL is applicable to the use of autonomous weapon systems, and second, that IHL provides both prohibitions and regulations for weapon systems, or to take it a bit broader in the terms that are used in IHL instruments, IHL provides prohibitions and regulations for means and methods of warfare, including those with autonomous features. And I don't want to redo the point of the characterization or the definitions, but that is just to make it very general. So we see this actually as a very clear reflection of the two-tier approach that has been mentioned already many times before. And we feel that this approach was echoed around the room. And we'd like to add, this was also already mentioned, that this is also a clear reflection of the first guiding principle that says, and I quote, that IHL continues to apply fully to all weapon systems, including the potential development and use of lethal autonomous weapon systems, unquote. So we want to build a little bit further on what you just said in your very useful introduction. It seems important, before we do so, however, that we make a few more general observations, and then we will make some more suggestions about which IHL prohibitions and regulations are relevant in the context of the mandate of our group, and how these would relate to the normative and operational framework on autonomous weapon systems. So first, IHL is of course just one branch of international law that is relevant in the context of our mandate. And we have a national position that notes explicitly that also other branches of international law may be relevant, in particular international human rights law. And we know that the relevance of international human rights law is not part of this topic on the agenda, but we also know that its relevance was mentioned a couple of times yesterday in different submissions. And we would just like to put on record that we think that this is an area that further work needs to be done, maybe not in this GGE, but maybe elsewhere, and also the relevance perhaps of the more broader item of the military use of artificial intelligence is an area where this could be done. But the second more general observation that we have is the way in which we hear the different delegations express the IHL prohibitions and regulations. And we thought it's perhaps important to find consensus that we have a clear understanding of what we're talking about. So we note in this respect that states first have different obligations under international humanitarian law, simply because not all states have ratified the same the same treaties. And in our opinion, as was also mentioned earlier, customary international humanitarian law mostly bridges the difference between these obligations. But yesterday, but also today, we've heard references to rules of international humanitarian law, principles of international humanitarian law, but also cardinal principles of international humanitarian law, which is a term that comes from ICJ advisory opinion, and that is also echoed in the very useful paper of the USA, Australia, Canada, Japan, and the Republic of Korea. So in our opinion, it may be wise, perhaps, that we leave the exact characterization of these different types of norms with academics, or at least, and we're not even sure, I think, that we can that they will be able to agree amongst each other what exactly the meaning is of these different terms. So it seems perhaps that in the context of our group, it's best to talk about either IHL obligations or IHL rules, as it's clear that IHL rules and IHL obligations are legally binding. And perhaps, and this is also something that you mentioned in your introduction, the items of the notions, I should say, perhaps on humanity and military necessity are also in this realm. And although we would say that the Martens Clause that you also mentioned is a legally binding rule also by itself, because it's part of many treaties, we think that that could in itself already be enough. So the next point is to look at which IHL obligations apply. And we would like to state that we agree with previous speakers and also you that the main IHL obligations regarding the conduct of hostilities are relevant. And these are distinction, precautions in attack, but also we think those against the effects of attacks, and the IHL rule on proportionality. And it would appear to our delegation that these IHL obligations could, as a very minimum, be part of the report of this year's GGE. And we agree with other delegations that spoke before us that there are also other very relevant IHL obligations, such as the protection of persons hors de combat, but also other relevant rules like those on the protection of the natural environment and many others. And lastly, we would like to note that there are also other areas of IHL obligations that are very relevant, but we get to speak about those later, and I'm referring to obligations with regard to weapons reviews, obligations with regard to weapons reviews, and those that deal with responsibility and accountability, which is also on the agenda for later this week. So it is our position that there is merit in an approach of making some of the de facto prohibitions actually that are based on IHL and make them explicit, and in what form this should happen, as was mentioned yesterday already, is the next step. But our delegation is ready to support your work in this regard, and as you know, we would in this regard support a legally binding instrument. Thank you, Mr. Chair.